WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. The federal government has rolled back vaccine recommendations for all children. The update comes as flu cases across the country are rising. Here in Chicago, respiratory illnesses are surging, especially the flu. Now, emergency room visits and hospitalizations from the flu are climbing as well, while vaccinations are actually down. In the Loop, senior producer Sienna Greaves joins me now with more. She produced this episode. Hey, Sienna.
Hey, Sasha. How you doing?
Doing well, but not everyone can say the same, right? Because it seems like everyone around me is sick.
Everyone.
What's going on?
I mean, everyone has the flu. They have the cold. They have RSV. They have some sort of respiratory illness. Even booking this show, a lot of the doctors that we wanted to talk to couldn't join because they were out sick.
And I got to state the elephant in the room. I'm looking right at our engineer, Ethan, who's wearing a mask because he's also sick.
Tis the season. Tis the season for masking.
Yeah, and lots of reasons, according to the doctors we spoke to on this episode, about why that's happening, why so many people are getting sick and being admitted to the hospital.
Yeah, Dr. Cozy is an emergency room physician at Rush. In our pre-interview conversation, one thing that he cited was the rising cost of health insurance. Now, we've been talking about, you know, ACA subsidies expiring on the show. We've been talking about that for a few months.
Yeah, that happened on December 31st.
It sure did. And the fallout from that is that, you know, a lot of people are doing without health insurance right now. You know, especially people with chronic health conditions who aren't receiving the primary care that they need to manage conditions like diabetes, like asthma. The fact that they're not getting that primary care is actually making them more susceptible to more severe flu and respiratory illnesses.
Yeah, we also saw, of course, this is, you know, we just came off of the holiday season. So a lot of people were doing what? They were traveling,
yes,
right?
They were.
A lot of people were traveling. And so that's where some folks picked up some of these respiratory illnesses.
I stayed at home this year. I couldn't face it.
Yeah, I traveled. I was concerned. I did not mask up, which I should, you know, practice what these doctors are preaching. Thankfully, I came out unscathed. But again, not the same story for everyone.
I didn't travel for the holidays, but I am planning to fly later on this month. I will be vaccinated by then.
You better.
And I will be masking up.
I will be holding you accountable. Let's get some more advice then from a pair of local doctors. Thank you so much for stopping by, Sienna.
Thank you, Sasha.
At the table, we had Dr. Brian Bora, who's a medical director for the Vaccine Preventable Disease Surveillance Program at the Chicago Department of Public Health, and Dr. Nicholas Cozy, who's an emergency physician at Rush. So the Illinois Department of Public Health says flu activity has reached very high levels across the state, as I mentioned. We're seeing a rise in respiratory illnesses and all this as the federal government has rolled back the number of vaccines that are recommended for kids. What is the rationale behind the move by the CDC? Dr. Bora?
You know, I don't think I can say with certainty what the rationale is. I think this was a predetermined outcome that folks in HHS leadership have been looking for reasons to arrive at a place where there are fewer vaccines available to Americans, unfortunately.
Okay.
I mean, the truth is, you know, with fewer vaccines, we are unfortunately going to be seeing more vaccine-preventable diseases. And I think this will only hurt our children who you know, we're obligated to protect.
Why would we go backwards, right, and scale back the number of vaccines?
I know in Chicago and Illinois, we will try as hard as we can not to take step backwards. And Illinois Department of Health and Chicago Department of Health together have worked very hard to, you know, establish these protocols and regulatory bodies basically to be able to provide independent guidance mm-hmm. and recommendations to Illinoisans, to Chicagoans, regardless of what happens in the federal government.
Right. Anything to add, Dr. Cozy?
We know that vaccines are safe, effective, and evidence-based. In the emergency department, we see patients from all over the spectrum, young, old, insurance, no insurance. Mm-hmm. But ultimately what we know are patients that have been vaccinated for the flu do better, less rates of hospitalization, come out healthier,
right.
less mortality and less death. Overall, those are the points we have to continue to discuss. Safe, effective, and evidence-based.
And the number of vaccines recommended for all kids, it's been cut from 17 to 11, to be specific, right? And this includes vaccines for meningitis, hepatitis, and others. Other dangerous diseases, wouldn't you say, Dr. Bora?
Absolutely.
So how should families, you think, listening, just navigate these new guidelines?
You know, right now, this is very breaking news. We at the Health Department in Chicago, you know, other folks at other health departments and really around the country, professional bodies, other physicians, other caregivers are really trying to understand what the repercussions will be. So we will certainly be issuing updated guidance. Mm-hmm. For now, I think folks in Illinois can continue looking at the Illinois Department of Public Health website, the Chicago Department of Public Health website. Again, you know, we're dedicated to providing up-to-date and really evidence-based recommendations for vaccines that are not based on ideology or politics.
Right. And before we dive further into this flu spike that we're talking about today, I got to ask quickly about measles, right? Because Illinois saw 14 confirmed measles cases this past year. This is according to the state's public health agency. Cases have been on the rise nationwide. The CDC kept the measles vaccine on its recommended list, but I wonder how worried you are about seeing a trend like this.
I think the number of cases, you know, we've seen in the United States more measles cases this year, rather last year, 2025, than we've seen in the last 30 years. And I think a big reason behind that is this loss of trust in the vaccine. So I'm worried that we will see those types of trends for other diseases moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, again, we do a lot of preparation work. Chicago's in a very good place, actually, as far as coverage rates for the measles vaccine. And we continue to improve numbers as best we can.
Dr. Cozy, how big a spike in flu cases are we seeing right now?
Right now, we're seeing one of the most concerning flu spikes in our city and in the country than we have in the past 3 to 4 years. Mm. We're seeing positivity rates rising from 15% last year. At the same time this year, we're looking at 25%. Mm. So 1 in 4 patients who are being tested at Rush specifically.
What's happening? What's driving that surge?
There's a few different things. There's declining immunization rates for the flu. There's a lot of congregation happening around the holidays, Christmas, New Year's Eve. Ultimately, people are coming back to work now. They're coming back to school. This is the first week of the new year. And ultimately, we're seeing patients coming in who are a little more sick, dehydrated, and ultimately, we're admitting patients at a higher rate.
Wow.
Sasha, I recall working the other night, and I was looking at the waiting room, and most every patient I saw, flu positive.
Really?
Flu positive.
This is in the ER.
That's in the ER. And ultimately, that was concerning for me as a physician, concerning for our teams, but we know that we're not alone, and we're seeing this increased rates, which is ultimately reassuring to us that we have the ability to be proactive, saying, if you're not feeling well, you're staying home from work, keeping your kids home from school. There's things we can do in good terms of good hand washing to really blunt this, to ensure we're making trends in the positive direction.
Dr. Bora, what is the subclade K? Because I've been trying to figure out this strain or the super K variant
sure.
of the flu, right? Because it looks different this year.
The thing with flu is that it is constantly mutating. That's what it does best. So okay. every year, you know, we see changes in the strains of flu that are circulating. And that's the reason why every year there's a new annual flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's designed to be specific against what scientists and public health professionals predict will be the dominant strain in the upcoming flu season.
So did they predict correctly this time around, or did this Super K kind of throw us off our tracks?
This new clade K, subclade K, really was only detected in June, and that was after the vaccine had been selected for this upcoming season. So there's some concern that it might not be perfectly matched to this strain that's circulating right now. However, I think there's good reason to think that it may still and it will still provide good protection against those most serious consequences of flu, like hospitalizations and death. And the UK in specifically has been doing some early studies to see if this vaccine protects against the subclade, and they've shown some good early results.
Mm. Yeah, because I am seeing global reports of folks dying from the flu. I think we might have had our first child death in the city recently. I mean, is this variant the cause? Would you say that?
It's hard to say. You know, every season we see new strains of flu. Historically, there has been some association with more severe flu seasons when the dominant strain is in this family, this flu A H3N2 broader family.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some concern that we might be seeing some more severity, but this subclade specifically, there hasn't been any evidence that it is more severe than
right.
other subclades.
And tell us again, Dr. Kozy, what the symptoms look like. How do we know that we potentially have this super K variant version of the flu?
Well, it'll be very hard to determine if you as a patient have that variant versus the regular old flu.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, rising symptoms that are abrupt onset, so they're fast, headaches, fevers, bone chilling, body aches, cough, shortness of breath, all signs and symptoms, especially coming out of the holidays, that you yourself may be having the flu. I want to bridge off something Brian said because I think it's extremely important. And that's the idea that vaccines they do not make you invincible. They help provide a shield for you that could help repel some of these worsening variants. Because there's a lot of discussion that variant wasn't covered in the flu. But what we're seeing still is if you are vaccinated against the flu, even with this variant, you're less likely to have severe disease, as Brian said, less likely to be hospitalized. And overall, you're a patient coming into the emergency department that we can make you feel a little bit better, hydrate you with fluids, and ultimately, you're not the patient that we're admitting to the hospital.
Right. So what I'm hearing you say is whether or not we were ready for this particular variant, you're still better off with the vaccine.
100%.
Absolutely.
So those symptoms that you described a moment ago sound very much like COVID. Is that what's happening? Is this mimicking COVID in a way? I feel like that would add to the confusion of like, what do I have, doc, when I show up to the emergency room?
It's very difficult sometimes to decipher without specific testing what you may or may not have. Viruses can present in a myriad in a very different amount of ways, but they all kind of can share some very similar presentation and some symptoms of a fever, dehydration, cough, body aches, abdominal pain, vomiting. So it's difficult for us to give advice as a physician saying, oh, you have COVID or oh, you have flu. What we're seeing right now is some patients come in with a few different viruses because of the congregation that was happening over the holidays. But we still talk about things that we can do to be effective. Hand washing, staying home from work, keeping your children home from school. These are things that we can do right now today to make sure we're taking care of ourselves and our community.
Say that louder for the people in the back. Stay home from work. Stay home from work. I may or may not be talking to some people
in
this building.
I won't be writing the work notes. That's Brian's purview. He can write the work notes for you.
Dr. Bora, are there particular groups or demographics that you would say are more susceptible to the flu in general? Whether it's super K or not?
Sure. I mean, like we've been saying already, you know, those that have not received the seasonal flu vaccine, we always see more severe outcomes in those groups. But I think what you're referring
thinking
to are
of
more
like the elderly.
Exactly. Yeah. So
kids.
Younger kids and older adults are classically sort of those high risk groups for flu. And we specifically, you know, call out caregivers of those two age groups as well as people that are. You know, it's super important for those folks to be protected as well so that they can you know, secondarily protect the young kids and the older adults.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about the fact that we're seeing more people hospitalized, Dr. Kozy. What is the reason that so many people need to be actually admitted?
One of the big things that we're seeing this year in relation to previous years and why we're admitting higher numbers of patients this year is something called hypoxia, or low oxygen in people's blood. When they're having shortness of breath, when they're having cough, and they're having trouble catching their breath, their oxygen levels are dropping, which require us to place them on supplemental oxygen to help them feel better, to increase their overall oxygen in their body. And overall, that's the reason why we have to admit them to the hospital. That's a little bit different this year than in previous years. That's what's making, you know, the last
shift
that
I mentioned. Right, you would send folks home, right? I mean, they'd come and be seen and maybe given medication or...
Yep.
But now they're staying.
We would help them make sure they're not dehydrated. We would help reduce their fever. Overall, we would tune them up, if you will, and then we would discharge them back home. Mm. But ultimately now, with that level of that oxygen dropping, it's requiring us to admit them at a higher rate.
Mm-hmm. We've brushed over the fact that fewer people are getting vaccinated against the flu. Why do you think that is, Dr. Bora?
I think it's multifactorial.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I saw as much messaging this time around
as
I usually do.
Yeah, from the federal government specifically, I mean, there was a big shutdown right around the time when they would maximize that messaging.
Oh, that's right.
So I think that had a big effect nationally. And, you know, across the country and here in Chicago as well, we've seen this slow decline year to year in the number of people who are getting their annual flu shots. And this year, that trend unfortunately continues. We see fewer people having gotten their shot this year than we did last year.
And we've touched on the fact that COVID cases are up. Can you share more about what's going on there?
Sure.
Because you do still have folks walking around thinking COVID no longer exists.
COVID cases are up. You know, RSV cases are up as well. Respiratory syncytial virus. Those are not rising as quickly as they have in years past. So, you know, a glimmer of good news there. But yes, you know, this is the time of the year where we tend to see these seasonal respiratory viruses, especially after the holidays. Mm-hmm. You know, kids going back to school. Now is the time. If you haven't gotten your vaccines, you know, it is not too late to go out and get them.
And it's worth repeating. Tell us how folks can protect themselves. Should they be masking right now?
If folks are not feeling well and they can't stay home, we definitely recommend them to be wearing masks, especially those who are most vulnerable, older patients who have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or COPD, who have immunocompromised conditions, they're on chemotherapy. Those are things that we can do in our own communities to make sure we're safe and effective.
Any other respiratory illnesses that we should be aware of?
Those are the big three that we talked about. There are plenty of other respiratory viruses that circulate throughout the year, including during the winter months. But these measures that you can take, you know, washing your hands, covering your mouth when you cough and sneeze, mm-hmm. staying home when you're sick, those will protect your community from all of those viruses, not just flu.
Yeah. Is it safe to travel right now?
Traveling right now, in general, is always a personal decision you have to make with your loved ones and your family. Ultimately, this flu season has a higher rate than previous. We're anticipating, hopefully, that trend will downtrend over the next couple of weeks. It's a cause for proactiveness, but not a cause for overall alarm at this point. Brian, what would you say?
I would agree. I would also recommend people speaking with their caregiver or their physician before traveling, especially internationally. There
yes.
are certain vaccine recommendations.
You're sitting on that plane for a long time.
That's
next
right.
to so-and-so and so-and-so who are coughing up lungs.
Exactly. And different countries, you know, have different disease trends as well. So
right.
specifically, you know, measles vaccine has a very... has a specific recommendation prior to international travel for young kids. So speak to your doctors prior to travel. That would be my recommendation.
Yeah, and Dr. Bora, while you're at it, just remind us, where can folks get that flu vaccine?
They can get it at pharmacies. They can get it at their primary care offices. The Chicago Department of Public Health also has our own brick-and-mortar vaccine clinics. You can go to our website. I believe it's chicago.gov/vaccines, if I'm remembering correctly. But you should be able to find it online. We have a list of our clinic locations and hours.
I'll give the last word to you, Nick.
Ultimately, what we're trying to do right now is make sure people are proactive in knowing that these treatment parameters that we're discussing, vaccines, safe, effective, evidence-based, you could do something today to protect yourself and your family. And as we do that, we're going to protect our community.
Dr. Nicholas Cozy is an emergency physician at Rush, and Dr. Brian Bora is with the Chicago Department of Public Health. Thank you so much. Great advice.
Have a great day. Feel better.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them down, Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor, and Sophie Sherry, who's a public safety reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. You'll hear Cindy Hernandez, who also writes for the paper, join the panel in just a bit. Claire kicked things off with the latest on the property tax spike on Chicago's south and west sides. She tells us why a group of local Black clergy held a press conference yesterday in front of Trump Tower.
Some Chicago Black clergy say they want the county to essentially freeze property taxes for homeowners that were hit especially hard with these steep increases recently. Mm-hmm. They were also asking folks to revert taxing amounts to the 2024 first installment rate. So at this press conference, clergy said South and West Side voters who've supported Illinois Democrats actually saw the largest spikes in these Cook County property taxes.
Yeah, they did.
The pastors say they're willing to support at this point any candidate who can find a solution, no matter what side of the political aisle they're on. And the pastors say they plan to host a candidate forum for both Republican and Democratic assessor candidates before the March primary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Property taxes are steep.
Girl.
They are steep. Sophie, let's talk immigration for just a moment here. A WBEZ and Sun-Times analysis, it found that Broadview detainees were nearly twice as likely as detainees across the country to self-deport.
That's right. So we're finally getting some data from those first couple weeks of Operation Midway Blitz. And our analysis found that the number of people who were booked into Broadview who opted to voluntarily depart the country skyrocketed during that time period. It was about 36% of people who entered the suburban processing facility. And like you said, this was more than almost any other ICE facility nationwide. Mm. We spoke to some legal experts who even had the chance to go into Broadview themselves, and they've noticed some very concerning patterns about how this all may be going down. They feel that a lot of those booked in are almost being coerced into leaving the country. They question the sort of voluntary part of this voluntary departure. Mm-hmm. Many people are being given forms in languages they don't understand without being given the chance to speak to a lawyer. Others are saying that the conditions within that facility were so bad that they were also prompting people to leave rather than stay and wait out their case.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And again, majority had no criminal record.
Yeah, that's right. Among those that chose to self-deport from Broadview was a group of about 150. The majority of those had no criminal record.
Goodness. Joining us now for the Daily News Update is Cindy Hernandez, who's a Chicago Sun-Times reporter. Good to see you, Cindy.
Good to see you, too.
Just in time, because I want to follow up on the big story out of South America, of course. We talked yesterday extensively about some of the impacts that could be felt here in the Chicago area. And I'm talking about ousted President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, who both pleaded not guilty in court yesterday to charges that included smuggling drugs and weapons. This was after they were taken from their home in Venezuela. What are we hearing from local Venezuelans?
Right. Well, I will say there's definitely a mix of emotions. For the most part, people have that, you know, they want to celebrate. This is something that people who have fled to the U.S. have been waiting years to happen. But with that also comes a lot of, you know, more questions. What comes next? Mm-hmm. They want to know, you know, what will the U.S. do? Will this jeopardize their cases? Mm-hmm. Will they be able to see their families? They just have, I think, more questions than answers to right now.
Right.
So yeah, they're just waiting to hear.
Yeah, there was some confusion about that, too, because, you know, even as I was following the bouncing ball over the weekend when this all sort of began to unfold, I did see a lot of, you know, if you're looking at social media, a lot of Venezuelans in the comments saying, oh, actually, I'm Venezuelan and this is a good thing. But then there was so much nuance there that you still had to sort of take into consideration.
Right. Right?
A lot of people were still not pleased with how it was being done.
Exactly.
Right. That's the big question. You talked about cases, Cindy. Tell me about the impact on Venezuelan asylum seekers.
Yes.
Here in Chicago.
So they are worried that Maduro being captured will jeopardize, you know, if they have a pending asylum case. Mm-hmm. A lot say that they fled for fear of persecution, for fear of their safety. But when they are, you know, putting in an application for an asylum case, a lot of them have to prove that the danger exists for them. So with Maduro being captured, they're worried that the courts will say, well, that danger no longer exists. So you're not eligible for asylum anymore. Or people who do have asylum, they're also worried that that might be revoked as well.
Yeah. And sort of relatedly, we just talked with Sophie about just the detainees in Broadview, just how many are mm-hmm. self-deporting right now. And the aggressive deportations that we've been seeing here in our city, it seems to be leaving a very lasting impact on children.
Yes.
Tell us more.
We have spoken to several families who had some member of their family caught up during Operation Midway Blitz that was detained. And so we spoke to caregivers and other parents about, you know, what impacts they immediately saw in their kids following these arrests. And a lot of them noticed similar changes in their children, anything from increased anxiety, mm-hmm. Behavioral changes, you know, wetting the bed. And this was very similar across the board. And they tell us that, you know, they saw these changes immediately after the fact. And even now that their parents are back home, they are still kind of struggling with these new changes in them.
Wow. Claire, I'm looking at you because CTA News, State and Lake, it's closed.
Yeah, State and Lake is no mas at the moment.
No mas.
It's not like it's, you know, demolished just yet.
Oh, okay.
But the station closed yesterday until it is revamped, undergoing a rather large construction project impacting commutes for Green and Brown Line riders.
Yes.
So the CTA is anticipating it will take 3 years.
3 years.
Also, $444 million to complete this project. Sun-Times is reporting that trains will just sort of bypass the station for the duration of this work. State and Lake Station is the city's fifth busiest, and CTA is suggesting that you just use Clark and Lake. It's not that far. You can also use Washington and Wabash. And there's always a red line underground at State and Lake. That isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, as a former Brown Line rider, State and Lake was my spot. It was just central to everywhere I needed to go.
And seemed. Your In the Loop billboard was at the State and Lake
right.
station. So your face was one of the last
Wait,
faces
what did they
to
do
appear.
With my picture? Let's Can I call
I'll
somebody
investigate.
And find out?
I'll make a few calls. I'll get back to you tomorrow.
I got a dining table that can hang atop. Northwestern Medicine, there's a study out of Northwestern showing that alarming increases are happening right now in gestational diabetes, Claire. What kind of numbers are we looking at?
That's correct. Researchers have found that gestational diabetes rates in the U.S. rose 36% between 2016 and 2024. So the Northwestern study found the upward trend was consistent across every racial and every ethnic group, but the highest rates of gestational diabetes were found in American Indian and Alaskan Native groups. So this kind of diabetes causes high blood sugar during pregnancy, putting both the mother and child at risk of future diabetes as well as future heart disease. And researchers on the study say factors including older age at pregnancy, obesity, high stress, all contributed to the uptick.
Mm. Sophie, Chicago saw the lowest number of murders since 1965 last year. Tell us more.
Right. We ended the year with 416 murders in the city. Like you said, this was the lowest since 1965. Mm-hmm. It was also a 30% decrease compared to just last year. And the first time in nearly a decade, the city has dropped below that 500 number. Now, obviously, this all came during a year when violence in Chicago garnered a lot of national attention.
Yeah.
The president himself calling the city a killing field. You know, threatening to send the National Guard,
among other things,
threatening to send the National Guard here.
I feel like it didn't feel like a decrease.
Right, right. Even as all these, you know, threats of the National Guard, this aggressive deportation campaign kicked off, we were already on trend to see a low homicide number this year. And this is a trend that's been happening since violent crime sort of spiked during that pandemic era in 2021. So, of course, now that we have these totals, the president has claimed credit for that drop in violence, but critics have been
the National Guard that was never deployed, right? Did it, right?
Critics have been very clear that this has been an ongoing trend in the city.
So a steady decline, you know, since that peak in 2021. And, and so, well, let's hope it keeps going down, right? Zero is the number that we want to see.
Yep.
So as the new year gets underway, folks, I mean, it's the first time I've seen the two of you since, you know, last year. I've been saying that joke all week. But as the new year does get underway, I am curious, what are some of the top local issues that you're going to be keeping an eye on for 2026? You first, Cindy.
Honestly, I'm going to continue keeping an eye out any further immigration enforcement. Mm-hmm. Federal officials have said they're not done with Chicago.
It's not over.
That it's not over. So I'm curious to see what that brings into the new year, and as well as how communities in Chicago will continue to react to that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we think Bovino is still coming back in the spring.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Fourfold,
I would not be surprised. So,
goodness, what about you, Sophie?
Similarly, I'll be keeping an eye on violence in the city. The mayor himself credited a lot of this, you know, decline in violent crime to the efforts of violent prevention groups. And we know that a lot of those groups will see the end of much of this COVID-19 funding they received. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching very closely about how they're able to continue to operate on the level they have, if this will have an impact on violent crime in the city. If some Springfield or others, I know Mayor Johnson told us he's also looking at philanthropists in this state as well to step up and help fill that gap to ensure these programs that he attributes to this drop continue to operate.
Very good questions. I'm talking to Mayor Johnson for Ask the Mayor on In the Loop next
there
week.
You go.
So I might steal some of those questions from you, Sophie, and put in a question with the mayor myself. We've been talking with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Cindy Hernandez and Sophie Sherry from the Chicago Sun-Times.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll join us for more. We drop a new episode about Chicago news and culture every weekday afternoon, including our weekly news recap on Fridays. And once a month, Ask the Mayor. Thanks for listening and have a great day.